Monday after Thanksgiving. The long NFL week is almost over. There were three games on Thursday, a game on Friday, a whole slate on Sunday, and it finally ends tonight with Giants-Patriots, a game you'll hear right here on The Fan. More on that as we get closer to game time, and also a show feature announcement coming up at 4:30, and we'll talk some Mets as well. So a lot to get to, but Joe B's Monday call-in with Evan and Tiki is brought to you by Approved Oil. Visit freezetherate.com, HL Gross Jewelers of Garden City, Tortle Orthopedics, the experts at getting you back to being you, and by Audi Manhattan, where luxury meets excellence. Joe, hopefully you had a great Thanksgiving, and guess what? We have a Jets victory. How are you?
Yeah. No, I'm good. I mean, it was, you know, it was nice. It's always nice to win, bro. You know, what else can I say? It looked like a professional team yesterday. Let's start with this. I'm going to start with this, okay? This is about the best that I have felt about the direction of this franchise in a long time.
Mm.
I really, you know, and the coach, look, the bottom line on the coach is they're playing for him. They definitely play for him. There's no question. Got to come out, cut out some of these nonsense penalties like the guy doing the Watusi on the ground.
The Prairie ball, yeah.
Whatever the hell he was doing there, you know, and you can't have two false starts on the potential game-winning drive at the end of the game. Okay, when we could get into that. But they're playing for him. There's no doubt. They should have. Tyrod Taylor should have been playing long ago. If Tyrod Taylor would have been playing, you know, most of the year, you know, let's see, like, but the third game of the year, if he was playing, they'd be in the hunt now. They probably have a couple more wins than they do. But it was nice to see. And I tell you, bro, how about this? Does anybody in the NFL have better special teams than the Jets do?
That's incredible.
I mean, they got a great punter. They got a great kicker. They should have never let Nick Folk go. He's the best kicker the Jets have ever had, as far as I'm concerned. Right? They should have never let him go. The return game is unbelievable. This Isaiah Williams, they cut him. You know, Glenn cut him. He had a big fumble in Miami. Remember, he had that fair catch on a 2-yard line, whatever it was.
Yep.
This guy has been he's been instrumental in every game they won. He had the big 80-something yard return yesterday. He had a big return, too, to set up the game-winning field goal drive. He got it to about the 45-yard line. You know, he had the fumbled punt. We actually got a turnover, a fumbled punt, to get a gimme touchdown out of that. And, look, Tyrod Taylor I don't want to say he was great, but he did what he had to do to win. I mean, he made some big plays, the big pass to Mitchell.
Mm-hmm. The scramble,
right. A couple of the touchdown scramble, and then the one on the game-winning drive where he got a first down, he ran, you know, for 14 yards, got out of bounds. That was a big play. He really played well, I thought. No turnovers. He didn't turn the ball over. Solid, solid win. And I'm going to tell you this, okay? And they're not going anywhere this year. I think they're going to win more games. I think they're going to win at least a couple more games. Forget the first or second pick in the draft. It's not happening. You know, if you're a Jet fan, stop, you know, wanting them to lose. This team needs to learn how to win. This is a new regime, and it's about, you know, it's not a coach on his way out. They need to learn how to win, and they need to win games.
Yeah. Joe, I think the biggest thing, and this is, it's, we can get to the players and everything that's going on in the field, but you mentioned Aaron Glenn. I think he's learning and growing into this role. We talked about it in the press meetings and how he'd starting to get bring some levity into it. Then he got really snippy with Rich Samini, which was stupid. And then
that
he
was kinda,
and then he walked,
with Garrett Wilson.
Right,
injury.
But then he kind of walked it back a little bit.
Right,
kind of,
right.
I don't really apologize, but you know what I mean. It just felt like his evolution from a public leadership standpoint is what I'm enjoying watching. And even on the field, when he's messing around with the red flag.
with the good call. With the he was right. He won
it was
that
a great call, though.
He
but it
won
was
the
like,
challenge.
It's like, you know you're wrong, and I'm just dropping his flag right next to you, like, in his dramatic fashion.
Right.
It's just, I'm starting to enjoy his personality a little bit more, because I thought he was going to be kind of a jerk, and he's not.
Yeah, you're right, Tiki. He's learning on the job. You could see that they're building something there. And I got to tell you this, too, all right? As I watch, so far, Darren Mooji has done nothing but give me a great hope that this guy knows what he's doing and he's going to pick the right quarterback. I have to tell you, I have confidence it's not Mike Maccagnan or Joe Douglas or, God forbid, John Idzik, that he's going to pick the right quarterback. What he has done... Okay, the fleecing of the Indianapolis Colts
right.
for the overrated and now injured Sauce Gardner to get two number one picks and to get this kid Mitchell, who right now is, let's be honest, I mean, he's almost a number one right now. He's clearly number two to Wilson, you know, if Wilson, when Wilson comes back. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, really, those trades completely changed my feeling about the direction of this franchise and showed me, hey, you know what? They got an idea of what the hell they're doing. And I think that Muji, you got something with him. I mean, you know, you look at the draft, Membo, Taylor, Thomas, Moore. These guys are all playing, okay? I mean, the degree of how good you think they are. Membo had kind of a rough day yesterday, but, you know, he's been good. These kids are all playing. Mechie had a rough day yesterday, too, but still, that was a terrific trade for Michael Carter. No doubt about it. You know what? Bringing guys like Phillips in, Griggs, these kind of guys, I feel good about him. I do. I have to tell you.
Yeah, and the trade deadline of Sauce and Quinnen did two things. Because you're right, like, they're not quitting on Aaron Glenn, and I wondered after trading away guys who maybe we were all ready to trade. I don't know how the locker room is going to react to it. You're taking away two Pro Bowl caliber players.
Williams wanted out. I think Williams wanted out.
He
did. Sauce was a shock. Mm. Williams, not so much.
But I never know what the room's going to do because in the locker room, they may be like, how the hell are we trying to win games? They're 2-2 since they got rid of those two guys. So I think that shows a lot to your point about Glenn and how they're playing for the guy. Because that would have been easy to watch this team go the other way after those trades.
No question about it. And Tyrod should have been playing all along. They would at least be in the hunt. I think they would have had probably a couple more wins. But I feel pretty good about them. I mean, go win some games. Go beat the Dolphins. Give the Jaguars. That's a big game for Jacksonville. Go in there and, you know, and at least give them a tough time. Dare I say, can we beat the freaking Patriots when we play them at home? You know, I'm seeing progress, and I feel pretty good. And even about the draft, and I'm going to say this to everybody. Oh, no. Okay. They're not getting the first pick. They're not getting the second pick. They got all this draft capital. If the Tennessee Titans get the number one pick, okay? Now, I don't know what they think about Cam Ward. I haven't seen the Titans play. Who's watching Tennessee play? I mean, you see him occasionally on a red zone. I don't know. You know, they got one win all year, and they got hammered yesterday again. You know, so I don't know. But I don't think Tennessee's taking a quarterback. So we have the draft capital to get up and get the first pick in the draft. Mm. If you think Mendoza, whoever it is, Simpson, Moore, whatever guy you want to think it is, I would think it's Mendoza. I know Muji has gone to a couple of Mendoza's games to see him play and all of that. And it seems to me that's the rate, that's where they're going. We'll get better gauge of him as he starts to play. The better competition. You got Ohio State Saturday night. That'll be interesting. Then going into the playoffs and start playing better teams because Indiana, outside of the big win at Oregon, has not exactly played a big-time schedule. So we'll see. That's going to be interesting. But I feel good, bro. I really do. I this is the first time in a long time. I think the needle is actually pointing up for this franchise.
It's amazing what winning does, Joe.
You know? But it's not even the winning. It's just the whole, like I said, once they made those trades, Teak, that showed me they had an idea, they had a direction, okay?
Right, of course.
Of what we need to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it happened on the fly. It wasn't like they planned this. We're going to stink, and then we're going to trade Quinn Williams and trade all these guys. Like, you had to do this in real time, which is actually, I think, more impressive considering how you've set yourself up. Yet you also were in games, and you can win some of these games going forward. That's what's most impressive about where the Jets have pivoted, so to speak, in the middle of the season.
What I'm curious about, though, Joe, is I remember when Muji took over and Glenn took over, the first big decision they made, highly criticized by a lot of people, including yourself, and that was getting rid of Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
Do you look at that now, and forget what's happening in Pittsburgh, this 6-6, it was a disaster yesterday, but in terms of what this franchise decided to do, does it make you look at that decision and say, you know what? They were right about this to dump Aaron Rodgers?
I feel better about it. I think the one thing, though, the biggest mistake that Glenn made was thinking that Justin Fields could play. I mean, I think we're beyond that now. I think we're over that now. Fields is obviously not going to be the guy. I guess he's not very happy. I've heard rumors he doesn't want to run the Wildcat, whatever. You know, all right, beautiful. Justin, take your $30 million and take off. I mean, whatever. You know, but that's fine with me. I don't care. Look, he took a shot at it. He felt that the kid had something, and he turned out to be wrong. But it hasn't crippled the franchise in any way, shape, or form. So I feel good about him. I would bring Tyrod Taylor back next year to be the starting quarterback. and to ease in whoever that rookie quarterback is going to be.
I think it would have crippled the franchise if, let's say, Rodgers was here.
Right.
And they got off to a bad start. Right. Could you imagine his reaction if they traded Sauce Gardner and Quinnen Williams?
Yeah.
He lost his mind. He would have been done. He would have demanded they cut him, basically.
Right. It's turned out to be the right move. I'll say that. And, look, he looked shot. I mean, he got hurt. He was playing hurt yesterday.
Now he looks old.
He took that one shot from Boza, you know, where he got the bloody nose and all that and had to leave the game. I mean, the end is near for Aaron Rodgers. There's no doubt.
Couple of decisions from the game. All right. And maybe this was – I went yesterday, so I sat in the rain for 3 hours. So
Did you take your son yesterday?
I took my youngest son, Spence, who now loves football. So
How old is he?
He's 5. He had a great time.
Sat in the rain with you without an issue?
Yeah, and he said, when are we coming back? So
really?
Be at the Dolphins.
Because he likes winning. You get to see winning. You want to go.
That's
maybe,
true.
Maybe, you know what? He won. Maybe you should go to all the games. The Dolphins. Get ready for the Dolphin game. Let's go to the Patriot game.
I think I may. I mean, especially when
about going next week. We'll see. It depends on the weather. For me now, you know, if it's not relatively, you know, I can do it when it's cold. If it's going to be any precipitation,
rain is rough, man. It's just
for the playoffs, I would.
For the playoffs, I'd sit on hot coal. I mean, I'll sit through fire, but when it's raining,
stop getting ahead of yourselves.
I'm saying that's the only way you get me.
Yeah,
now,
of course. No, I hear you.
That kind of a game.
There were two plays that I was sort of annoyed by. I want to go back to the opening drive of the game. You got a 4th-and-2 from the Atlanta 48. Should've go for it, right?
I was very surprised he didn't go for it there and he punted. I would have went for it for sure. Yeah, so far it seems like he's going for it. I think he was spooked by what happened last week when he went for it on 4th-and-2 against the Ravens and didn't get it. See, he shouldn't have went for it in that situation. He should have went for it yesterday. I agree with
you. The other one, and I am definitely convinced I felt this way because after 3 hours and 15 minutes, I was ready to go home. I did not want overtime. When they scored the game-winning touchdown, Tyrod Taylor scrambles.
You want to go for two?
Yes! Did you?
I did think go for two. The reason I think he didn't do it is because he had 3 timeouts left. I think that's the reason he didn't do it. There was
I think you're right.
50. He still had 3 timeouts. He said, "Wait a minute, I'm better off, you know, kicking the extra point." And look, it worked out. I thought it was, you know what I thought was a bad call. 24-24 when they got the ball back and they're on their like own 6-yard line, 10-yard line, whatever it was, and they should have ran. They had 2 timeouts.
Yes. Yeah.
They should have ran the ball there. He has him throw, and Membo gets beat, and he gets sacked, and that really killed that drive. And they got and this was a big point in the game too that nobody's talking about. The punt by McNamara after that, basically from the end zone, that pinned them back on about their own 35, 36-yard line.
Huge.
That was a huge punt. I thought for sure they're going to get the ball at midfield or better. And their kicking game is outstanding, there's no doubt. That was a huge punt.
Monstrous. It goes to the first thing you said about special teams. It's not just Nick Folk. It's not just them actually forcing a turnover on the muff. It was that play. Because you're spot on. They were getting the ball at midfield. Yep. I thought, it's going to be easy. They're going to win the game.
Yep, that's what I thought. No question about it. They come up with a 3-and-out. You know, there was a couple drops in there. How about the play of all people? 2 people I got it that we have killed forever that I have to give some credit to. Michael Clemens actually got a sack.
Yes. Okay? Yes.
I had to do a triple take, number 72. And how about the play, and it was on the game-tying touchdown drive, where it was 3rd down, too. Taylor throws a pass, it gets tipped, and somehow, of all people, Alan Lazard.
In the middle of the field.
Right? How big a play was that?
I thought it was interception. The way floating in the middle of the field, I was like, this is pick. Game over. It's going the other way.
Unbelievable. You knew it. You felt good about our chances when especially Lazard making that catch, who's done nothing for basically 3 years here. How long he's
every been. Time Alan Lazard's out there, I almost forget he's on the team. I'm like, oh my God, Alan Lazard is still here.
I know. There's no doubt about it. But it was a nice win. Tyrod played well. I'm all for bringing Tyrod back next year to be the tutor to whoever the quarterback's going to be. You know? So Breece Hall, they need to bring him back. He had a pedestrian game yesterday. I believe the record now, and you can look this up, and I've heard different things about this. I think they're 18-5 when he scores a touchdown. believe it or not.
Wow.
Think about it. Look that up. It's ridiculous what their record is when Breece Hall puts the ball in the end zone.
What was interesting about Breece Hall, and I had to look it up after the game just to see if this is true, it felt like he was on the field the entire time, and he was.
Yeah.
He was on the field for 90% of the snaps yesterday.
As he should be.
As he should be.
By the way,
that
was Alan Lazard's only target and only catch, and it wasn't even targeted for him.
Yeah, right. And it was a huge play in the game.
Huge.
You know? It was a big play in the game. The other thing, too, the penalties, they got to cut this out. There was some big – Mechie had a bad game. He dropped a couple passes. One over the middle would have been a first down, and he dropped another one by the goal line that would have given him a – I believe that was the field – I believe that was on the drive after the return by Williams to whatever it was, wherever he got it to, you know, the 15-yard line. And he dropped that pass on third down, and they wound up settling for a field goal. And he also had a holding penalty that really hurt the drive. How about Atlanta? They got one penalty all day yesterday. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on. You tell me there wasn't one holding penalty on a Falcon yesterday?
Dude, that was a disaster.
How about Tyrod
getting hit late on the ground, and they didn't call that one either?
And they called it with Cousins, who barely got touched in the – bro, barely in the face, and Cousins is going like this to Hockley. It was Sean Hockley who was the referee. Another winner. Just like his father.
I love
the officials. You know that.
Well, they had a rough weekend. Forget just the Jet game. How about the missed extra point that they said was good?
Oh, yeah, right. That's right.
The penalty, the mess-ups in the Washington-Denver game. I mean, they feel like they're consistently worse every single year.
The officiating.
Every year, every week.
Every week, yes.
The officiating in the NFL is terrible.
It is. Yeah. How about the strip sack on the tush push for the Eagles?
Right.
How come it works for them? Doesn't work for us?
I know, it's unbelievable. Look, I don't trust the officials anyway, especially in this day and age with all the nonsense that swirls around with all these different gambling companies. Who knows?
I looked it up.
I'm not accusing anybody, but to me, it can't be ruled out either.
This is the problem when you get into bed with gambling. It opens up those questions when there's bad officiating. It used to just be incompetence. Now is it incompetence or is it crookedness?
Right. And how about this? And I don't know. How about this? You talk about bad, and this wasn't because I'm all over the college too. And I don't know if you saw. Did you watch the Michigan Ohio State game?
I didn't see it. I missed it.
Okay. There was a play. Go look at this play. The kid Smith was a tremendous receiver for Ohio State.
Jeremiah Smith, he's a stud.
He is. 6-3 is the score, right? I think it was on fourth down, too. Sayin throws this pass to Smith in the corner. Looks like a no doubt.
Oh, yes, the fumble, like the sack.
He juggled the ball, and they counted it as a touchdown.
A
touchback.
Right.
And they looked at it, and they called it a touchdown.
Yeah.
I'm like, what? Come on! I mean, look, Michigan wasn't going to beat him anyway. But I mean, can you make the right call there?
Yeah, that one was obvious. The ball was loose when he crossed the goal line.
No question about it.
And he didn't reestablish possession
until he went out of bounds.
Until his foot was out of bounds.
That's right.
I did see that.
You know, so it's not just the NFL referees; it's the college ones too. So, that was pretty bad. But look, it's nice to win. You know, wake up on a Monday morning, got a smile on your face. Nick Folk is money. I got to tell you, bro, I was super confident he was making that kick. I got to tell you.
Really?
I was.
Well, after the penalty, I thought
he's going to miss it by 2 yards.
He's missing it by 2 yards.
You know
what?
I didn't think that at all. He had missed one already.
Right.
He actually missed one that was, I think, a yard shorter.
Yeah, it's close.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right. This guy's money. Nick Folk. I mean, come on, bro. You know, we were there in Indianapolis.
Yep.
Kicked the game to win that game in the playoffs in Peyton Manning's last game as the Colt quarterback. He's the best kicker we have ever had, and they never should have let this guy go. I have tremendous confidence in Nick Folk, and I actually felt he's going to make it, and the way he made it, Teak, it looked like a little two-iron shot.
Oh, dude. It was
about 10 yards off the ground, right?
That's why I thought it was short. I was like, that thing didn't get it was over the bar for maybe, I don't know, a foot? Less
just
than a
inside,
foot?
Just inside the left upright.
Right.
It was just inside it and barely cleared it.
But it traveled that height the whole way.
Right. Yep. And I guess he tried to kick it that way.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, so, thank God. Hey, Ev, at least you got soaked. Your son enjoyed a win, and he won.
Exactly. So, it was a big victory.
Take him to the I don't know if the weather's going to be so good this weekend. Take him to the Dolphin game.
Well, the early return looks like it's going to be cold but no rain, and that's the key. That's
if it's
that,
cold,
that's
I don't care.
Yeah, the cold you just bundle up hand warmers, no big deal.
Right.
You
can get through it. We were at that Cincinnati game, the last game ever at the old. Remember that?
Yes.
At the old Giant Stadium?
That is the coldest game I've ever been at. That was unbelievable.
Cold, yes. It was colder than Pittsburgh for the championship game.
No question. Right?
That was unbelievable. I remember sitting in the parking lot, in the car, right, until about 15 minutes before kickoff. And Cincinnati had no desire to play football.
Zero. They didn't get off the plane that night. It was unbelievable. It was a party.
No, we had a party that night. We froze, but we, you know, I think we went 41-0.
Yeah, it was a blowout.
3?
Yep, it was an easy one. And by the way, you're right. 18-5 when Breece Hall gets in the end zone.
There you go.
Incredible.
Unbelievable. That's quite the stat.
No doubt. Thank you, Joe. Good talking to you, man.
Hey, God bless, guys. I'll talk to you Monday, all right?
You got it. The great Joe Beningo on the Jets getting a victory over the Atlanta Falcons. And he said it right at the top. It's the best he has felt as a fan in a long time. When we come back, we'll get back to your telephone calls. We've got a show feature announcement. And yes, some rumblings of Mets locker room drama. Evan and Tiki on a busy Monday. Jets win, Giants trying to win as they take on the Jet division rival, the New England Patriots tonight. Game you'll hear right here on the Fan. Tiki will be doing the pre and the post. We'll start to analyze that game shortly, and we'll get into the Met locker room issues in just a few minutes. But at 4:30, it is time to announce a feature on Evan and Tiki that's making its return 1 week from today.
In a city where every game feels like life or death.
Terrible darkness has descended.
Where heroes are made one night and booed the next.
That swing right there is why people think that Volpe's going to hit 20 homers.
2025 has delivered it all. The walk-offs, the wipeouts, the firings, and yes, a few classic New York meltdowns. So now, it's time to count them down. 25 in 25. The 25 most memorable moments in New York sports from the year that was. Chosen by a highly secretive, completely unbiased, and definitely real committee.
I can't take this seriously. I don't even believe there is a committee.
Beginning December 8th at 4:30 p.m., Evan and Tiki begin to unveil the list. Only on your home for New York sports. WFAN.
That's right. It's back. 25 and 25.
Wow.
Are you excited? You made the promo, Sean. Congratulations.
That's awesome. I'm in there. I'm pumped up.
Disparaging the supposed committee.
Well, there is a committee.
Of course, I mean,
they announced.
Sean doesn't believe it, though.
I don't believe it because last year I had a major issue with them. And when I went to poke around, nobody had an answer for me. And it was like everybody was keeping a secret from me. Who's in the committee?
You wanted to complain and there was nobody to complain to.
And that nothing bothers me more in life than if I have a complaint. It's like a shell company. Where are you, people?
I will admit I was looking at the list of 24 and 24. That was last year's list of the most memorable New York sports moments of the year. Keyword memorable. Some are good, some are bad. Mm-hmm. And this year was not a great year.
Well, it's been a crappy year for sports.
I know. I'm looking at like 24 through 20, and I'm like, damn, those would be like top five this past year. But do you remember what the most memorable New York sports moment of last year was? Because I'm looking at the list right now.
It was King Judge, wasn't it?
No, it was Juan Soto signing with the Mets.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, that happened last year.
That was last year.
I remember having this conversation around how did it really apply? And it did because it was in the calendar year.
So I spoke to the committee about this. I sent an email because I will admit I got a heads up that 25 and 25 is returning next Monday. I mean, it's part of our show. I should have an idea on it. And I wanted to get clarification off of last year's controversy. Is there a cutoff time? Because something could happen tomorrow.
Yes.
Right? Like Pete Alonso could shockingly sign with the Yankees. And so here's the note I got back. The moment, and I guess that's next Monday at 4:30, the moment the list gets unveiled, that's the cutoff.
It has to be.
So December 8th at 4:30, which, by the way, is in the middle of the winter meetings, so who knows? Kind of risky.
Pete better hurry the hell up. That's all I'm saying.
That is the cutoff time. So apparently, they have a list. I mean, they must be ready with 25 and 25, but it could change based on anything that happens in the next week. That is my understanding. So before you bitch about it, that's what they told me.
I'm just trying to think of what the hell, what's number one going to be? St. John's losing to Arkansas? What kind of year was it?
Here were the top five from last year. Soto signs with the Mets, number one. Fifth inning from hell, World Series game five, number two.
That was King Judge.
Juan Soto's home run that sends the New York Yankees to the World Series, number three.
Oh.
Yankees lose game one of the World Series on walk-off Grand Slam was number four. And Lindor's Grand Slam against Philly was number five.
Well, there you have it. So we've already wiped off those five off the board because our baseball didn't make the runs they had before.
Just a reminder to Sean, the Knicks went to the Eastern Conference Finals, and we drafted our franchise quarterback this year. So those are two big ones to consider, I would say. Those runs and the Giants drafting Jackson Dart, I would imagine, be in the mix.
Right. Dave's getting fired.
Yeah,
that's definitely going to be
memorable.
But see, guys,
Sauce and Quinnen being traded on the same day.
Yeah.
So you're right. There's stories. That's not a team in this town actually making the World Series.
I mean, the Knicks made the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah.
What? They made the semifinals.
They lost to the Pacers. Did they really make it?
Okay. They made the Eastern Conference Finals.
I will back up Sean with this. Last year, we had a team in a World Series. Another team in an LCS, and another team in the second round of the playoffs in the Knicks.
And another team in the conference finals this year.
Who is that?
The Rangers.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. This year, other than the Knicks, which you point out.
Oh, that was the beginning of the year. That's right.
What do we have?
Nobody went on a run, but the Devils made the playoffs, right? And then the Yankees made the playoffs.
Okay, what else?
Giants beat the Eagles.
You went to Europe. That was nice.
Yeah, Greece.
Well, yeah, there you go. But that I think, is Sean's point he's not making in an eloquent way. It's not a knock on the Knicks. The Knicks, obviously. I would assume the Knicks are going to be all over this list. I mean, memorable in 2025? I think the Knicks are going to be all over the place. No question.
Well, I think we're going to find out that.
That's funny because I'm not remembering a lot.
You have to remember who they even played.
Oh, well, hold on. That is not. I give you three off the top of my head.
No. I get the postseason, the Boston victory, you know, beating the Celtics. Yes,
yep.
I get it. But I'm trying to think of the Knicks season. It was so memorable that I can't remember
anymore.
There
is one that you're forgetting that, to me, and I don't make the list, could be beyond all of them. Remember, it's most memorable moments of the year, and it's not necessarily a bad moment or a good moment. Oh. That's up to you. The firing of Tom Thibodeau.
Yeah?
That to me, that dwarfs Dable. We all knew Dable was getting fired.
Dwarfs.
The Tibbs firing is monstrous. Monstrous. What are you making a face for?
I don't know. I just feel like it was inevitable. People had been talking about it forever.
Yeah, but people are talking about Aaron Boone's firing. Hasn't happened.
Yeah, but because
you
Boone's
talk
been
about
here
it
for a decade.
I understand, but Tibbs was here for a half a decade. He ended up making 5 years here.
Yeah, I guess so, but I don't know. It's not a moment that I'm thinking back on, man, what was I doing when that happened? How did we talk about it?
All I know is, well, we actually opened our show with me telling everyone, watch out, Tibbs isn't safe. And then an hour into that show, he got fired.
Oh, that's why. That's why I don't remember it.
Because I was warning everybody?
Yes, because we were warned about it. It wasn't a shocking, in the second, oh my God, he got fired.
Yeah, but you know what? In fairness, and I'm not saying we should take a lot of credit for this. Maybe we should. I think we were ahead of the curve. Mm. And not because we did anything special. I was trusting Ian Begley. And Ian Begley was writing after the Knicks got eliminated, hey, guys, be careful. It's not a lock. He's back. And I think most other people just assumed he would be back.
Yeah.
And I remember that show meeting before the show. I said, guys, I think we should open with Tibbs. And you were like, why?
Right.
I said, I don't think he's safe. Like, I'm not saying he's going to get fired, but I don't think he's as safe as people assume. And then he got fired. So I think what you're forgetting is how safe the perception was of Tom Thibodeau.
Yeah, there was no anticipation that he was going to. There was anticipation that Dave's was getting fired. And we kept talking about it. Every time he would lose one of these close games, and he'd be annoyed because of how poorly the management was in the moment that caused him to lose games. It was, all right, he's getting fired. It's just a matter of when. With Tibbs, it felt like he was safe.
Yeah.
Even though Begley told us otherwise.
We'll see where he falls on the list, but that's debuting a week from today, 4:30. We'll be unveiling a few every day, and over 2 weeks here in December, we will count it down to the most memorable moment of 2025. Now, you tell me, because I want to give everybody the facts, and then we could all decide. On Friday night, Mike Puma released an article about the locker room of the 2025 Mets.
Yeah.
A little later than we assumed. I mean, we're talking Thanksgiving. But who knows? Maybe Brandon Nimmo decided, now that I'm off the team, I'll spill the beans. Maybe Scott Boras decided I want to leak some stuff out. Who knows? You never know why someone would leak something out. Here is the important stuff about the, quote, chilly relationship between Francisco Lindor and Juan Soto. And this is it. Literally, there was one paragraph in the article that I think has lit the fuse on Met fans debating each other on if there truly is an issue.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even going to waste our time with McNeil and Lindor. For those that missed it, apparently McNeil and Lindor had another kind of incident in which Lindor was annoyed with Jeff, reportedly on a play from June 20th against the Phillies, and they had a shouting match.
Just a slow transition on a double play.
That
potential double play.
That's the play we're assuming, but I think Lindor and McNeil arguing with each other again should be a surprise to nobody.
Mm-hmm.
If someone chokes you in 2021, there's a chance that you don't put it all behind
you. And by the way, argument is very, very loose interpretation of it, because they were just standing next to each other talking.
That's the visual of what we have tried to deduce from it.
That did not look like an argument to me.
I agree. And I think that most assume McNeil is likely off the team this year anyway, so whatever. Here's the part that I think worries some Met fans. This is from Mike Puma's article Friday night. Another clubhouse source indicated relations between Lindor and Juan Soto were chilly following the latter's arrival on a record $765 million contract. Quote, Soto is very businesslike. All business, no fluff, the source said. He wants to come to the yard and work his tail off and win games. He's not into fashion or any of that other stuff. Lindor is into that. It's just two different personalities. Then Mike goes on to talk about something we've talked about, which is the quotes that Juan had about Marte being the real leader of the team. That's the crux of the story, that quote. So it's an unnamed source.
Yeah.
What do you make of that quote about Soto and Lindor?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Francisco Lindor he's into fashion. We know this. We've known it since he's been here. He cares about his look and his appearance. He wants to be the leader of this team. He wants to be the outward leader of this team. He plays that way. He's paid previously for Juan Soto that way. Why not take on that role? And it's something he's willing to do. And Juan Soto is completely opposite of that. He's paid to be the leader. He's not, because he's not a man amongst the people.
Right.
He's not trying to be in everybody's locker and be his buddy and I got you, you got me. That's not who he is. I got mine. I'm going to do my job as hard as I can and best that I can, and follow me by example if you want to. So I can see why they would butt heads. They're two different personality types.
Now, we already knew this, and I have no ill will towards Mike Puma.
This feels like nothing, though.
I agree. I think the Soto-Lindor feels like nothing, and it feels like even more nothing because I would reference you to Disha Tozar,
mm-hmm.
who wrote, I thought, a great piece on September 30th for Fox, in which he actually has quotes from Juan Soto and Francisco Lindor. And I think it's important for me to read them just so we could have a reminder on the relationship. First, with Soto talking about his leadership style in the Met locker room. I always want to help in any way I can. Definitely, I'm not the guy that is going to be on you all the time, but definitely when you have a question or any thoughts that I can help with, I'll be open to it.
Right.
So that's the kind of player I am. Here's what Lindor specifically said about Juan Soto in this September 30th article by Disha. He's away from the world, Lindor said of Soto's personality. It's him, his family, his little group, and that's it. He comes in and out. He shares moments with us, but he has said it multiple times. I'm quiet. I just want to come in, win, do my thing. That's just who he is. He's just in and out, in and out, in and out, and that's perfectly fine. At the end of the day, not everyone needs to be this big personality. We all love him. We respect how he's gone about it. He makes us better. I almost feel that these quotes already told me the story about Lindor and Soto. They're not best friends. They're very different. Lindor likes fashion, and I agree with you.
For the fashion,
it was a nothing burger.
The fashion has nothing to do with it. It's just how you present yourself.
Right.
Lindor likes to present himself. Juan Soto does not. He just wants to come put on a baseball uniform and play baseball.
Now, you don't think it's a big deal. I don't think it's a big deal.
I don't at all.
Sean Morash told me earlier today that I was just wishing it wasn't a big deal.
Well, hold on. That's not what I said. I don't think it's a big deal, but you like to. This is what I've personally garnered from that. There are certain things where I think you get defensive and you wish away that it's something.
You wish away the issue.
The issue. I don't.
What is the issue?
Okay. I don't think that.
And are you accusing me of being positive, Evan?
No.
That's Tommy's giving.
I just think there's been certain examples of this, and I know they're all differences, very apples to oranges. Even the Mikal Bridges, they'll never trade Mikal Bridges. Like, this is never going to be an issue. This, I think,
well, that's different. That was a decision to trade him to a rival.
Okay.
That's not about a locker room issue.
But you're very quick to go when it's something really close to your heart. Never, 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 never.
No biggie.
I don't think that this is a big deal per se because
he's accusing me of being you, Tommy.
I am. I think winning changes everything.
Right.
And I don't think Lindor or Soto, obviously with their contracts, are going anywhere. But I don't think this is nothing. Like, when he writes about the fashion, I don't think it's literally about the fashion. I think you read behind that. I think the insinuation there is Soto thinks Lindor cares about too many other things besides the baseball, where he's focused on the baseball. And that's what you're supposed to garner from that. I think reading this, knowing what was going on, obviously Lindor and McNeil's a big issue out of there. There's clearly something there where Juan Soto entered this locker room, and we talked about it all year. Why does he look unhappy? And we all kind of laughed about it. He obviously, to me, I just didn't jive with whoever the leader in that room was, which was Lindor, and he probably just didn't like the way he approached things. Doesn't mean they can't work out, doesn't mean they can't win a World Series, but it is worth monitoring that this team is going to be spearheaded by two guys that have two very differences of lifestyle on a baseball team. Doesn't mean it can't work out, doesn't mean it's a big deal, but it is worth something to monitor since this is going to be the two guys that are the pillars of the core of your team moving forward.
That's no biggie.
All.
Yeah, I think you're right. Something to monitor, it's not a big deal, though.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, the way you explained it, I don't necessarily disagree that it's something to monitor. Well, I remember when Soto made the leadership comments about Marte, I brought it up on the Rico and brought it here and said, hey, guys, what do you think of this? This sounds weird to me.
Well, it was only weird because he kept saying the word actually.
Right.
To which I think he's just, it's a filler word. It's a like a clutch or crunch word.
No, I think he was making it clear Marte's the leader.
No, but why would you say that?
Because I think Marte's meant a lot to him in his career, has worked on him during this past year, getting him out of a shell, making him more a part of the group. I think Juan's acknowledged that. And
so,
I think
so Francisco Lindor is not that?
So here's the way I view it.
Because he's the accountable one. He's the one that stands up in front of his locker and answers a question, meaningful questions every day instead of ducking behind and peacing out because he just wants to talk baseball. Like, I think Lindor's done everything to be a leader of that team.
You tell me if I'm right about this. I know football and baseball are not the same, but this is why Sean may be right overall in a theory about me, which is I have always minimized locker room issues.
Mm-hmm.
Not just for the Mets in general. A-Rod versus Jeter.
Right.
I talked about it on the air. Like, I don't think it's a big deal. No biggie.
No biggie.
To quote you, Tommy, I think that when you've got 28 men in a room or 26 men in a room or in football, 53 men in a room, there are multiple leaders. There isn't going to be one guy who leads everybody.
But I don't think Juan Soto talking about Starling Marte is disparaging Francisco Lindor. Because when I say he's using it as a crutch word, what he's saying is he's lifting up Marte. Because I don't know what the question was. Like, we have no idea what Juan Soto was asked about Starling Marte. We have no idea. It was just, he kept saying Starling Marte. He's actually the guy that you go talk to.
By the way, it was also a Puma article, so clearly. Right. I love you, Mike. You're a crap starter.
My point is, the question could have been, tell me something about, I don't know, Starling Marte.
Right.
And it comes out, well, he's actually a great dude. He's actually a great leader. I actually have a good relationship with him, and he helps bring me out of my shell. Not, he's the actual leader over Francisco Lindor.
Right.
If that's the implication, then that's just bad writing. So we don't know that.
Yeah.
Because you're not telling us one way or another. And so when you leave it open for interpretation, you're making it divisive just because one person's going to read it one way, someone else is going to read it another way. So don't leave it open for interpretation. It's easy. I'm not saying it's easy, but it is easy.
I don't think in baseball, guys not liking each other, if that's even the case, because I don't even have evidence they don't like each other. Right. I just have evidence that they're very different. I don't normally think that's a big deal. I mean, Gary Carter and Keith Hernandez.
Who cares?
Right. And I'm not just going to use that example. There's a million examples. I think in basketball, it's probably a little bit more different because cohesion matters.
Yeah, you can literally ice out a guy you don't like.
Yes. I think when it's a right fielder and a shortstop, I truly mean this. It's a no biggie spot.
Who cares?
So that's why when I address it on the Rico or even I address it here.
Damn it, Juan, you didn't hit me on the cutoff third. I hate you.
Damn you.
No biggie.
It's not me wishing it away, because it doesn't even mean anything to me emotionally. I don't care if these guys like each other or not. I care if they win. And in 2023, I didn't think it was the clubhouse. I think it was they weren't good enough. Mm-hmm. In 2024, when they won, I didn't think it was the clubhouse. And in 2025, I don't think it was the clubhouse. So to me, I always think that's an easy crutch that we like to use when things don't go well.
Yes.
And that's my view on the whole thing. The McNeil thing, like, I just think Met fans are over Jeff McNeil.
Yeah.
Thank you for your time. We appreciate it. Good Met. Solid Met. Deserves a tribute video. But sometimes it's just time.
Right. And next.
He does deserve a tribute video, Tommy.
Evan, they give a tribute video to anybody.
No, nah, but the,
of course
the guy,
he's getting a tribute.
He deserves one. He won a batting title with the Mets. Come on.
I understand that, but...
Don't be a hater.
I'm not being a hater, but the bar is so low on tribute videos that, of course, he clears that. Like, I think anybody... Like, who wouldn't get a tribute video at this point? They give one... They played Harrison Bader's walk-up music when he came here as an opposing player.
What was he here? A year?
Who? Harrison Bader?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a year. It was a fun year. It was a wonderful year.
Doesn't take much to get a thanks for the memories.
I'm just trying to point out that thank you for your time. Like, I think that we as Met fans are over him. And if they could get anything in return, you just move on. Doesn't mean he isn't a valuable piece. A guy who can play the outfield, second base, though that's not going to be needed here with the replacement of Marcus Semien. But hearing that Lindor and McNeil got into another scuffle or argument, whatever it was, it's like, okay, whatever.
But Tiki, you could speak to this being a you know, on a football team. There's guys that are going to hang out after the game, and there's guys going to hang out with other guys, depending on your poison. Like, right. You're in a room full.
Some guys just go home.
Right. Some guys go home. Some guys go out. Some guys go to this kind of place. No, like, true. It is what it is.
Like, you find your, I don't say cliques, because that just makes it seem like it's high school, but you find your comfort level, your comfort zone. And some of these guys, they just like to hang out with each other.
So you don't think this means the Mets have to trade Lindor or Soto?
No.
No? Okay.
Why would they?
I'm just asking.
It's baseball.
I'm asking you the questions. But I got Met fans in a lather. So there you go. We addressed it. Let's go to Thomas in Wall Township, New Jersey. What's up, Thomas?
Hi, guys. How you doing?
What's good. Up?
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yes. What's up?
Yes. I called last summer, around July or so, and we talked about the Mets and how they had that meeting and things turned around, et cetera. It was a little bit after that. So it's very disturbing, this thing, this locker room report, which I, like you guys, I question the veracity of it. But, again, it goes to, and I've called before as well, talking about the manager and the manager Mendoza and also the Yankees manager. And I think there's a lack of leadership. I do. These small market teams seem to do much better, and they have oftentimes better leadership in the managerial area. And I just, and Joe Beningo last week said something very funny, but it was very well to the point, where he said that the GM was a Met fan, or the Met fans, the GM said he was a Met fan. And I sometimes question, you know, what he's doing. So I know the New York Giants are looking for a coach, and my idea is that, and Tiki, you spoke very eloquently about it last week, about leadership at the coaching level. You were remarkable, and I just feel that it's something that's not discussed enough. I think that, you know, you bring this new second baseman in for the New York Mets, and they say, well, he's going to win ball games through his defense. Well, a good manager is going to win ball games through his leadership.
Right.
And I think that many of the teams that don't make the playoffs could. But
Thomas, yeah. I guess my question would be.
I think I get what he's getting at.
What was he getting at?
So he's getting
explain
at,
it. To
he's
him.
Getting at the fact that you have a collection of great talent. Of that's a really good talent. Some of his greats. I mean, one of them better be great, making $80 million, whatever the heck he's making a year. But you have this collection of great talent, and getting them to play together is the hard thing. And this is any sport, but we're talking specifically about baseball. But especially when you're playing, I don't know, 160-something games, you're on the road, how many days out of the year, and you're going to be around and either annoyed or encouraged or whatever by each other on a consistent basis. Having a pulse on that is important.
But what do you do about it?
That's what leadership is. Mm. That's what understanding when to pull I don't know, Francisco Lindor aside, be like, hey, you know what? We need, I need you to get this out of Pete today. I don't know. He needs, I just, I sense something with him. I don't want to be the one that's always telling him, do X, Y, Z. You know, be my guy, be my advocate. And it, nobody else has to know. It just, it'll come from Lindor. Like, oh, Lindor is lifting up. Oh, look at Pete. Look at Francisco Lindor helping out Pete Alonso, right? Give him some pointers on whatever the heck it might be. I don't even, I have no idea what I'm saying. But leadership is doing what's necessary for every individual. And sometimes I think leaders in positions like we're talking about now just feel like, yeah, they'll figure it out.
Yeah.
They'll get, it'll happen. But sometimes there needs to be some proactivity. And I think that gets missed.
Yeah,
sometimes.
No,
and if you were asking me just from afar, I've never been in that clubhouse. Never talked to anyone in that clubhouse. But if you had asked me from afar, that's what was missing from the Mets. Is this, there's this little, not like this push, but this little touch that needed to happen throughout the season.
And I wonder
and it
if
wasn't
it,
happening.
I wonder if it was missing a J.D. Martinez or a guy
maybe,
like that.
Maybe.
I'm not dismissing his point or your point because I think there could be validity to it. I guess when I look at the failures of 23 and the success of 24 and the failures of 25, it's kind
of
easy just to look at the baseball reason.
No,
they pitched horribly.
Of course
they pitched horribly.
Of
so
course,
instead,
but they also didn't hit with runners in scoring position.
No, you're
for
right.
A lot of the season.
You're 1,000%
right.
They
didn't feel like they were walking the same line half the time. It was like they were content with each individual successes and not team successes.
No, you're right. I can't deny that. But I also saw historically bad pitching over the final few months of the year. And I look at cleaning up the rotation, being more clutch, which is tough to define. I don't know if that's a leadership thing or not. I'm open to saying maybe it is. And that will fix a lot of the issues. I'm just so used to and bored by the constant explanations of failures with it's the locker room. I've heard it forever, and it's, like, so predictable.
By the way, I don't think it's a locker room.
I don't either.
I think it's more leadership. I think it's more management.
Well, they did add Marcus Semien, who apparently is a wonderful leader, and he works really hard. We'll see if that makes a difference.
Okay.
I tell you this, if he's hitting 215, it ain't going to feel like it's making a difference.
It won't matter. I don't care how great of a leader you are. If you're not balling, then nobody cares.